Blog Talk Radio.
I thought it was a Boss Lady concert going on for a minute.
It was. It was about to go down.
You
know they like
stop.
That tune.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing?
Oh, man. Good. I'm trying to make a thing. I'm over here all the way down here in North Carolina, Fayetteville, trying to step in here and do this awesome, awesome show with you guys tonight. I've been traveling all over the place. Had a wonderful day. Met the people at the library, donated some books so we can get some Nene Capri in Fayetteville. So that was awesome, awesome, awesome. And I'm just trying to enjoy this journey until I am able to grace the presence of the readers on Saturday in Charlotte at the Books A Million on Still Creek. So that's going to be excellent. But I know it's going to be a wonderful show tonight. I miss you guys, and I want y'all to go ahead and get it jumping because the cast of this movie as well as the producer are ready to come on. They want to share, you know, their ideas and everything behind this film. You know, that was a very, very controversial topic and a very controversial event in America's history, what happened to Trayvon Martin. And I think that this is a great project to, you know, keep in light and focus and not lose, you know, the idea behind why everybody was fighting for justice in this case. So, Tony, you could go ahead and kick this show off. I'm going to sit back and let you guys pay the bills right quick.
Will do, boss lady. Like everyone said, hello, hello, hello. Welcome to our special edition night, Thursday, with Light and Royalty Radio. We have a fantastic show on tap, Tony, and one of your three co-hosts. And I'm just so excited to be a part of this journey. We have a fantastic show with the upcoming show, Journey Home. Journey Home, that has touched so many across this country. And I'm just, being a mom of two boys, it really touched me. So I'm sure it's going to touch all of our listeners. But one of my co-hosts to my right, the beautiful Alicia. Hey, Alicia. Welcome to this Thursday night. How's everything going?
Happy Thursday. Everything is good. Happy Thursday, everybody. For those who don't know who I am, my name is Alicia. I'm the head of Writing Royalty Promotion, as well as the head promoter for Nene Capri and Boss Lady Publishing. the admin for four groups on Facebook, and I am super excited. This is going to be a very good show. It, like Nene said, it's a very controversial subject, but it's very necessary, you know, to discuss and to get into the households and just to have just dialogue and conversation over so that people can understand and try to prevent some of these things from happening, even though sometimes you can't prevent certain situations. But if you talk about them, I think that some stuff can be, you know, prevented.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, I call it the number one stunner, Mr. Aaron Bevo. Did you cook today?
What's going on? No, actually, I didn't cook. I'm over here super duper excited, yo. I'm happy that Nene Capri is making moves. She on the road. She's setting off the tour. I'm up next very shortly. And beyond that, like, yo, I'm really seriously so excited about next week because I'm about to kill Cash.
Till my casket drops, April the 18th.
Yeah. Yes, till my casket drops. It's going to be serious. Very, very good writing competition. We're just trying to keep things peaceful and get the readers back focused on what we all here for, which is reading and writing and, you know, stepping away from all the nonsense and all that. It's a beautiful thing. It's going to be beautiful.
Yes, it is. Yes,
absolutely. We all excited.
I'm very excited. I'm blown away. I'm happy that someone is going ahead forward and putting a light to this story. They're using fictitional information about, that's not even a word, fictitional. Should I say fictitious? Excuse me. Creatively making a scene of how a young man could be going on a journey, be on a path, you know, have different things go on, have life, have love, going to school, you know, doing a lot of different things, your teenage crush, and they're looking at that. The main character's name will not be Trayvon. His name will be CJ, but they're using a lot of different things that surrounded events that could possibly be his life. And they're going to be able to highlight it. They'll be able to explain it a whole lot more. But they're trying to get it in the theaters. And I would love to definitely be at one of those premieres so that I can, you know, have a front row seat at seeing everything they did with it. We do have the short trailer, which we're going to continue to post periodically so that they can see, you know, where they're going on this journey. And I think that the viewers that are able to get out and watch this movie are going to definitely be enlightened, and they're going to take a different look at this. But like I said before, it was a very controversial time in American history for this young boy, as they say, an iced tea and a bag of Skittles put him in a grave, you know what I'm saying, just going out for a store run. So I can't wait for them to get on here and share with us, you know, their idea behind it, so that our viewers can understand, as well as people who will be geared up to watch the movie will be able to understand what it is that they're trying to convey to us through this this short film. So I can't wait to get them all in here. We have the woman who's playing the mother. We have the actual character who's playing the young boy, CJ. He's going to be on here, as well as the producer. So this is going to be great, trying to highlight this film, Journey Home. Aaron, how do you feel? I know you have a young son. He's we talked about him. He has a different type of journey against what you really would have wanted for him to have. But, you know, having, you know, being a black man yourself in America, then having a young son who you have to raise in a society where someone can be going to the store, or like the young brother who was at the gas station and, you know, the guy didn't like his music, so he killed him. You know, it's a lot of different instances where this stuff has happened. Like, how do you feel about that, Aaron?
Honestly, as a black man, I'll be kind of like, I'm really conscious about things like that anyway. So when it happens, I'm immediately angered, but I'm more so looking for the reaction of us as a people, black people, because if our reactions continue to be the same things are going to continue to happen to us. So I'll be always more mindful of the reaction of the people, because, you know, it's a hurting thing, but as an individual, you can't really have a voice toward the nation. And until, you know, black men, black women, black children, and everyone as a whole stands up and says, hey, you know what, this is it. Like, we have to come to some type of political, like, resolution for this, because that's the type of country that we are living in. It's all politics. Like, I'll be feeling like all black people should be like, you know what, we're not going to work till this is settled. Like, just shut down businesses, all types of stuff. Like, you know, another group of people did it, like, a few months back. They start pulling their money out of banks and stuff. Like, you got to start, you know, approaching the system with something other than the media that's being controlled by the same system that's oppressing you. You know what I mean? So they're not going to get your real point of view out. So you have to make a point. That's what I always be looking at, the reaction, honestly. I'll be angered, but anger is just a natural reaction. And then I'll be looking for a bigger reaction from my people, from the people.
Mm-hmm. It's like a mass reaction.
Yeah, resolve. Mm-hmm. You know, not for anger purposes, because nothing, you can't really resolve anything once you're angry, because once you start getting angry, it's going to take the focus off of what your initial goal and objective is. Like, if you start going out tearing up things and doing, it's like, oh, they wilding. You know what I mean? Like, oh, and then the focus is going to be off why you're wilding. Because it's going to be like, yo, they're wilding. And that's going to become the focus, and it takes off the focus of what the real problem is, because by the time they settle the dust from people being destructive within their own communities, more times than not, it just comes to an even balance. Like, okay, that happened. Y'all did this. A bunch of y'all still got locked up and beat up, too, when y'all did that. And everything's okay now. And it's like order be getting restored until the next time it happens. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's not a solution. That's
foolish. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, educating ourselves on different things and not going back into, you know, what they call the okie doke moment, where everybody's excited for that particular second while everything's happening, and then things flip right back over to the way they were. And I think that that's the difference between, like, our parents' generation versus this generation, whereas when they set out to protest and fight, they, like, really protested and fought until they pretty much got what it was that they were looking for, asking for, what so have you, whether it was the bus boycott, you know, sitting at the lunch counters for equal education and different things like that. Whatever it was, that even though it was drastic and people did get hurt, people lost their lives, people were jailed, however, they did not stop the mission, even if it took years, until they got exactly what it was they wanted in those situations. And I think that we have become such a society of acceptance in anything and everything that the media says is good, or we're going to go with this, that the fight is gone. It's like, okay, fight for now, then not fight for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But I can see that we already have the beautiful young lady who is playing the mother role. And I know that as a mother, one of the most people who was affected in the Trayvon Martin's case was his mother. You know what I'm saying? People were affected. People got upset, were angry or whatsoever. But I know no one carries the burden that his parents carried, and definitely the burden that his mother carries, you know, for having a child in your womb, you know, carrying them and having aspirations for them and wanting them to be somebody and have something in this life, and then their life be snatched away from them, you know, in a drastic manner, you know. So we're going to have her on here. She's going to explain to us her role and why she took it. If Leisha can read her bio, then I want Aaron to drop that beat, and then we're going to bring her right on in the clubhouse so we can continue to get this interview going.
Yes, indeed.
Leisha?
Okay, Tony has her bio. Go ahead,
Tony.
Oh, okay. The role of the mother is being played by Javetta Milton. She's 32 years old. She was born and raised in Greensboro and currently resides in McLeansville, North Carolina. In high school, Milton served as captain of the Flag Squad, was a member of Honor Vocal Ensemble, and helped start Page's Gospel Choir. She graduated in 1999. Currently, Milton is Miss Black Burlington, USA, runner-up for Miss Black North Carolina, USA, and a talented actress. Milton is a proud mother of two, Jalen and Kristen. After graduating, Milton led somewhat of a rebellious lifestyle and elected to get married with her parents, which her parents thought she was too young. Milton was approached about acting in 2009 by Pichanda DuBose, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing anyone's name incorrectly. Milton credits constructive criticism from DuBose and her colleagues as the principal factor that allowed her to hone in on her skills and techniques after being introduced to stage play, which eventually led to a theatrical career. In the 2010 play, Even a Wrench Like Me, written by DuBose, Milton's stage play illustrated the theme of forgiveness as she portrayed a bitter woman dealing with the ups and downs of her relationship with her son's father. Milton starred in her first comedic role in Where Is Heaven When All Hell Breaks Loose. In this James Lyons-written play, Milton says she had to act in ways that were quite distinct from the way in which she has led her real life. She says she had to conduct extensive research to get into character for the role. In 2011, Milton took part in a Wesley Rocks written short film titled Hello. Premiered at the National Black Theater Festival, Milton played the character of Sherita. She was a no-nonsense, outgoing girl who discovers that her man is unfaithful after giving him a chance at romance. Built on a real plantation, Milton helped to demonstrate the transfer of slave ideology from the past into the present in her role in the 2012 Bell production film Roots. And The Other Side of Pain, a play written by Roosevelt Jackson, Milton is an older sister who witnesses her younger sister struggle in a relationship with her husband. When asked about role models, Milton was quick to identify her parents. Growing up, Milton witnessed her parents work full-time jobs. Her mother attended cosmetology school at the same time, and Milton says it was inspiring and motivating to see her parents set goals, write them down, and accomplish them. So you want to drop that beat to introduce our first guest, Lebo?
Yes, indeed.
When I was younger and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. So back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was the fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama cast me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Dear mama,
please, no one above you.
You all appreciate it.
tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy, cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they sold drugs, they showed a young brother love. I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I started slanging. I ain't guilty, cause even though I sell rocks, it feels good putting money in your mailbox. I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you. Cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. You're just working with the scraps you was giving. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone. You're trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you, sweetie?
And dear mama,
baby, please, no one but yourself.
You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you?
Pour out some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy, there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me, and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you, sweetie?
Dear mama,
no one above
you. Dear mama, dear mama,
hello, 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 welcome to the Writing Royalty Clubhouse.
Yes, yes.
Evening. How is everyone doing tonight?
Great to have
you
on the line.
I am completely honored to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me on. I am doing well. I'm doing well. I'm sitting in a moment of greatness right now. So
that's awesome. That's wonderful. And we thank you for taking the invitation to come out. When I heard your story, when I heard, you know, what you guys were trying to do with this film, I had to jump on the opportunity to, you know, get you on the show and highlight what it is that you're trying to convey to the viewers that will be able to watch this film and, you know, just bring it home for people who, you know, are still having a lot of emotion and stuff heavy on their heart surrounding the particular case of Trayvon Martin. You know, and they're watching everything on the news and the guy, he's still getting in trouble. He's still doing a lot of things. Things are arising from his character traits. So it's a lot still going on surrounding this case, even though we are, you know, months away from the actual verdict. And I just want you to please highlight for our callers your particular role in the film and why you accepted it. What do you want to see come out of this project?
Okay. Well, I actually play the Trayvon Martin-inspired character's mother. His name in the film is actually CJ. I accepted the role because I did follow the case. I'm a mother. I have a teenage son, and so the emotion, I can't put myself in his mother's place. per se. However, my emotion stemmed from the grief and hurt that I felt for her. And then I also had my son in mind. If you could just imagine for a second going on with life normally, like everything is well. Maybe it may have been a bad day for her. It may have just been a normal day for her, but receiving that phone call that your child has been taken away from this earth, just the thought, it just kind of takes my breath away a little bit. I can't even imagine. And so when Quentin Little John contacted me and told me his vision and told me what he was doing, I'm always on board of anything that's going to make a difference and anything positive. And so I was like, yes, I'll do it.
Okay.
Now, the actual filming process, it had me on a roller coaster, because anytime I take a role, I actually have to do research. And it's inspired by Trayvon Martin. I read the script, and I'm referring to his mom. I'm wondering, you know, how she felt in certain situations. I know a lot of people try to pin him as a troublemaker. And, you know, kids, especially teenagers, when they get into that little puberty stage and going forth, they start to feel themselves. And, you know, they might not need mama, or they might not think that they need mama as much as they actually do need her. And so I just kind of put myself in that place and using my son as a as an example for me. And so we filmed, the last day of filming for me was when I got the phone call. Everything else, I knew what was going to happen in the script, but I was living my life on film as though I didn't have a clue. So everything was my interaction with my son as I would normally interact, not having a clue when his last day on earth would be here. So those days were, they were productive. It builds the story up of CJ's life, and it shows his love life and, you know, him getting in trouble in school. I don't want to give the story away, but it just shows particular aspects of his life and his interaction with his parents and his siblings and his neighborhood and surroundings or whatnot. And I think the most emotional time during this whole process, I don't think I've ever been this emotional before, but to have to place myself into the shoes of a woman who lost her son. See, when the cameras or when the director yells cut, I get to go home and hold my son and hug him, but this mom actually lost her child.
Right.
He's not coming back, and that, It just brought so much emotion. And I think with the actual Trayvon Martin case, I noticed that a lot of people were upset. They were mad. They're like, Zimmerman, you know, you deserve this, you deserve that. The focus kind of shifted off of this mother and this father and this family losing a child.
Yes.
And I don't think they had time to mourn. I don't think they really had time to get over their grief, because every day the TV's turning on or they go online and it's something about Trayvon Martin. Everybody did the whole Skittles and sweet tea and the hoodie, and it faded into the background. And then this mother and father still don't have their son, but they're reminded of this tragedy every single day.
Yes, yes, yes. And before you came on, we spoke about that, you know, how quickly things can fade and be forgotten about and forget that we're actually, you know, in a struggle. And it's a lot of black male children, black men, period, who take a regular trip to the grocery store or have showed up on somebody's porch because they were in distress and needing someone to call 911, but instead of that happening because of the stereotypes, because of how media depicts blacks and different things like that, they get shot down in the street like dogs. As a matter of fact, even the animals in this country can get more respect and more justice. I mean, you look at Mike Vick, he's still paying for what happened with the dogs. And not to say that that was not a tragedy, that was not, you know, something that we promote or anything, but how is it that, you know, a person who can take an animal life can get more grief than a person who takes the actual life? I mean, I'm looking at the guy, he's on television, he's traveling around, he can still have movement. I believe he painted a picture of Trayvon and his father, and he got like $30,000, if I'm not quoting it incorrectly,
for
the painting.
And now, that is crazy. So now the focus has shifted off of this grieving family and this young man who lost his life. And he's not the only young man. We, as we said before, you know, lives are being lost every day. Some of them don't even have names in the media, but the focus has shifted off of this tragic story onto this circus that is George Zimmerman. He's trying to fight people. You know, you're talking about the painting. His face is in the media. He's been arrested again, you know, since then. And the focus.
Yes, I believe twice. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So he's, the focus is drifting away from what it needs to be focused on. And so I think that Journey Home is waking everybody up again. It's bringing that attention back. And I actually went on to YouTube and I just typed in Trayvon Martin's name. And, I saw independent short films and little public service announcements. And I appreciate that because I want people to know. I want Trayvon Martin to have justice beyond the grave. I want his story to really be heard, to really be felt. And then for those young men, I hate to say it, but for those young men who will one day meet that fate, I mean, they need a voice. They need a voice. We need to say, hey, you know, this is an epidemic. These young kids, these young boys, they're being raised maybe the right way, or they're raised in an environment that is maybe not the best way to be raised in, but they might be being raised by their communities, but I just want these young men to have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And should they meet the same fate, someone needs to speak up. When is this going to end? When is this going to stop? Is it ever going to stop? Can we save someone from the same fate?
Yes.
I don't know if you can, but I will certainly try. Yes.
Yes, I definitely can't wait to continue hearing what you have to say on this. We're going to bring in Xavier. He's the one actually playing CJ's role, and we're going to bring him in so that we're able to hear what he has to say about that, because, you know, he's playing that role, and I'm quite sure the same way it was emotional for you, he's probably walked in those same emotions. We're going to have them read his bio so that we can have both of you on here, since you were playing those lead roles, and be able to hear how you were able to play off of each other and invoke those different emotions and continue with the show. Leisha or Tony, whoever's reading his bio, could you please read his bio? Aaron has a clip which is going to play really into this question that we're talking about, and then we're going to bring Xavier right into this clubhouse.
Absolutely. Xavier's training formally began in college, where he enrolled in an acting course. There he learned and practiced impromptu acting and participated in several plays like The Sound of Music. Xavier recently finished the filming of an indie film titled Journey Home, a story of growth and inspired by the late Trayvon Martin. And Xavier isn't acting. He works full-time as a professional mover at a local moving company. His hobbies include, but are not limited to, rigorous exercise, dancing, reading, promoting his own personal business as a health and wellness coach, Xavier Thompson's Herbal Life Wellness Coach. And Aaron, drop that beat so we can meet actor Xavier Thompson.
Okay. And this is just a short clip, and I think it's very important. It's from the movie Menace to Society.
Hmm.
Yes.
Whatever changes you have to make, then you just do it. You got to think about your life. Being a black man in America isn't easy. is on. And you're the prey. All I'm saying is, survive. All right?
Mm. Whew.
Wow.
That was powerful.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that evokes a lot of emotion, even in the moment of remembering when they actually filmed that. I mean, it was powerful then. It's even more powerful now. And let's get Xavier on the line so we can begin journey with him. He's on?
Hey, yes. Xavier.
Xavier?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh,
how you
man.
Doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How's everybody this evening?
Oh, just trying to maintain. Yes, we're happy that you're joining us. We have Alicia and Tony on there, the co-host, also Aaron Bebo, author, and, of course, we have on the wonderful and beautiful co-star in your movie, and we're going to go ahead forward and try to take the journey with you. If you can please let us know, you know, why you accepted this role and why it's important to you. What do you expect, you know, the viewers to walk away with after this film?
Well, the reason why I accepted the role, on a day-to-day basis, we are susceptible to, you know, case-by-case cause and effect scenarios. And in the Trayvon Martin case, I think if Zimmerman had responded differently to the situation, you know, maybe the outcome, the tragic outcome may have been averted. And, you know, with that said, you know, one person would have needed that kind of an introspective look into who they are and have an understanding of what they want out of life at that particular point in time. And when I say that, I mean, if Zimmerman had asked himself, why am I still pursuing this young man after the 911 dispatcher told me that it was unnecessary because officers were en route, I feel like something may have gone differently, you know? I feel like
right.
If he had taken the time to ask himself, why am I behaving this way? It's not necessary. It was told to me it was not necessary. Why am I pursuing this? I think a lot of us in our day-to-day acquiesce to preconceived notions of what we're supposed to do or how we're supposed to behave, and we don't even take a second to ask ourselves, why do we do what we do?
Mm.
So my biggest thing is I'd like to promote a better understanding of introspection and the need for a personal and honest internal dialogue with oneself.
Mhm. Okay. So that's basically what you're saying, that from your perspective, what you want people to actually do is walk away with looking at how you could react better in a situation. Like you're saying, if he had listened, if he had took, you know, a moment of time to just say, let me relax, let me chill, let me fall back. You know, I've already gotten expert advice because the police officers were the actual experts. He was not a cop. He was not, you know, licensed to protect. That was a job that he took on his own self, you know, to help out in the community, which it's nothing wrong with helping out in your community. It's nothing wrong with saying,
absolutely not.
Let me help police the situation, because we have to look at it in real terms. I mean, if we all lived in a community that was nice and well kept, we would want each person to watch the other person's back as far as not letting, you know, the area become filthy, or, you know, if you see something wrong, you're able to report it, but not to step over the boundaries that are set, which they say by law, which these laws people fight for to put in place, and then you totally ignore those so that you can then administer your own justice. So, yes, in that respect, I do think people need to take a minute and have a harder look at how they react to things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On that same topic, like, not just as, like looking at how they react to things and the people that are reacting to things, but after something happens, like, I think, in my personal opinion, as far as the case and the circumstances and everything, I think America already knew that blacks were going to play the race card, and they played right into it, and everybody just lost the true focus of the law that they was trying to protect this man with, which is stand your ground. Like, at the end of the day, Trayvon Martin was standing his ground. They were both in an isolated area. And I think the focus got away from that when people started trying to play the race card and this and that. And all. You have to start focusing on what really, really happened. Nobody was in front of their residence right there. So the stand your ground thing really just should have been played out even from the prosecution's perspective. Like, okay, Trayvon was standing his ground when this guy pulled a gun, and he was already told by police to stop the pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
But
that,
there
mm-hmm.
wasn't no real focus on Trayvon standing his ground. Because
right.
the law applies to both people, whether you're armed or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it also says meet force with force. Like, they have that law. Like, if someone
exactly.
is smacking you, you're supposed to be able to smack them back. They don't want you to pull out a knife and stab them. So how does a fist fight turn into you pulling out a gun and shooting this man dead, you know, in the street? So, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how did you feel, Xavier, you know, playing that role, having to be, you know, that young man? And this role is, you know, there's a lot of controversy around this particular individual's life, Trayvon Martin's life. How did you feel as being a character similar to him?
Well, I kind of felt, honestly, I kind of felt at home. I mean, my father was always very protective, and he was always trying to keep us away from harm's way. You know, he didn't want us to get dragged into any type of situation based off of how we looked or how we carried ourselves. He always tried to protect us that way. So I felt like I could very easily have had been Trayvon Martin.
Mm.
It kind of felt I was at home. You know?
Okay.
It was more or less a wake up call for me that this the kind of thing can happen. I mean, I haven't found myself in a situation like that, and I'm thankful for that too. So.
Okay. So if you don't mind us asking, how close are you to age as Trayvon? Are you closer to his age or further away from it?
I'm 26, so I'd say I'm
okay.
further away from it.
Okay. Okay. So, okay, now, with that type of situation with, you know, you being an older gentleman, do you feel like the clip we just played said, do you feel like the prey in America, in your communities and different things, if you're not in your community, if you're in another community and you're walking around and different things, do you feel like the prey in America?
That's interesting. I can see how people would feel like, some people would feel like the prey, but my dad has always been very, very adamant about keeping our eyes open and making sure we're aware of our surroundings and who we're dealing with and how to get in and out of in a way of a bad scenario. So I look at it more or less like I'm better equipped to deal with it. So I wouldn't look at myself as prey.
Even knowing that, you know, the hunt is on, or that you could very well be at, you know, the gas station minding your own business, and maybe you don't have on the proper item of clothing that someone else feels is appropriate, or maybe you're playing a certain tune that someone might not agree with any given moment, or you're driving down the highway because, you know, you are in the South, you know, and you can be put in a number of situations quickly. Do you ever have those ideas or those feelings or those thoughts, you know, as you travel with knowing what can happen and then knowing that no justice may come of it once it does?
Well, yeah, I guess I could see it that way. But it does go back to, I remember I was listening to Quentin Little John on a radio interview, and he mentioned being cognizant of how people will respond to those types of things and learning to alter one's own behavior, you know, and be aware of it and make a change. So I could see how people would carry that and take it as, you know, we're being preyed upon. Yeah, I mean, we are. It's the truth. But for me personally, because I've been, my father's been steadfast, and I'm just aware of it more readily than I think maybe your average Joe might be. It's harder for me to see myself as prey because I'm ready for it. Like, I know it's out there. So I guess you can just say that I'm more cognizant of it, and it's easier for me to sidestep it and react appropriately than it may be for a 17-year-old young man. So
Okay.
I will say, if I can, if I can just say something really quick. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to some teenage boys, actually a set of twins. They both had just turned 18. And we got on the subject of racial profiling somehow. I cannot recall, but I will say that one of the young men said, oh, I get stopped by the cops all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why? And he's like, I don't know. Are you speeding? No. Is your tag okay? Yeah, I don't know. They stop, ask what I'm doing, and keep it moving. I'm like, and this is normal to you? This is normal to your parents? I mean, is this a wake-up call? Should somebody be saying something or trying to figure out what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
I know in certain areas I see cops in a predominantly black, low-income neighborhoods here in the Greensboro area. You can't drive down certain streets without seeing a couple of cop cars parked or driving, patrolling, or whatnot. You go into the suburbs or certain other neighborhoods, and you can't even – I don't see them. I just don't see them. So I know that a lot of our African-American males are being raised to hate the police for that very reason.
And I think that they're coming desensitized. I think that it's happening so often that it's becoming a normal accepted behavior. I mean, it's laws, like you said, it's laws in place for stopping people for no good reason at all. I mean, I can remember being pulled over, and I had my brother-in-law with me, and he's, you know, a pretty, you know, big dude, and he's in the car. We driving, and they pulled us over. You know, the cop wanted to look through the car and everything. He looked inside. So I'm looking at him. I'm like, okay, yes, I'm always very cordial. He said, okay, after he finished looking everything over, he said, ask for my license up. And he said, okay, now let me go justify this stop. And he went back to go back to his car. So the first thing came in my mind was justify the stop. I'm like, if you stop a person, you're already supposed to know what you're stopping them for.
Right.
You know, not you shouldn't have to then justify the stop once the stop has already been made. Like, you're supposed to have a suspicion that something is going on. If it's speeding or whatever the case may be, you're supposed to already know what you're pulling someone over for. And the suspicion has to be strong enough that you're pulling them over for a reason that's valid. But I think that our children have become so desensitized to it because not only is it happening often in their community, it's depicted with so much non-care, if you could say that, in the media. It's like it's like a slap on the wrist. Like, nothing happens from these different things that's going on. So I think that they don't even care. How do you feel, Tony? I'm going to ask you, you know, having young boys, teenage boys away from you, you know, they're in college and different things. When this stuff happened with Trayvon Martin and they got, you know, everybody up in arms, people upset, people angry, as a mother of teenage boys, how did you feel, Tony?
Ashley Meany, this case touched me very close to home because at the time that it was happening, I had a son around the same age as Trayvon Martin. And actually, he was killed on my son's birthday. So February 26th will always be ingrained in our family.
Wow.
But it's a daily battle. By my son being away at school, I like to talk to him at least nightly just to know that he's okay. You know, like Xavier said, my husband and I are always telling our children, and especially our boys, to keep your eyes open, be aware of your surroundings. You know, just be respectful. Be the person that we raised you to be. And don't give them a reason to pull you over because some kids are just not used to that. They're not in that environment. And my kids are not used to having to be pulled over by a police officer. Not that that's any excuse, but no child should be used to doing that. But I always told my kids, you have two strikes against you, being black and being a young man. And we're always telling them that. And it's unfortunate.
Okay. Yeah, and you're looking at the dialogue now that you have to have with children. You know, when we were young, and Aaron, we talked about this earlier, how society has changed. It's like, you know, we were young. The biggest thing was
don't forget your keys, you know, make sure you have some change for a phone call, you know, if something should happen, you know, be back here by the street light hour, or, you know, simple things, you know what I'm saying? Now you have to give your children pretty much a whole synopsis of what not to do. You know, if the cops pull you over, who should be having conversations with their children, you know, at young ages about what should happen if the cops pull you over, stay docile? It seems to me like we may even be walking backwards in time. You know, when we had the separate lunch counters, when we had the separate schoolings and things, you have to actually give your children warnings before they leave the house and lay things out so that they are able to handle these situations when they arise. And that's unfortunate. Aaron, what do you think about that?
I definitely think that times have changed from one generation to the next. I feel like one generation may have missed a major piece of you know, the structure and of the communities that we live in. I don't even, you know, it's just that's what happens. Like, the police come in profiling and things like that because there's really no common unity there. The people that are grouped up there are all facing a circumstance that keeps them pulling at threads. So it's constantly, you know, you constantly on alert. And you could always go into those communities and, you know, disturb things. Any outsider can always do that because everybody living in there already feels like an outsider. Like, if you go in a community where people are organized, like any community, Jewish, Muslim, anything, where it's those type of people, you can't just come in there tampering with those people. Because somebody's going to say something, you feel me? But when you're in a community of people that are all disadvantaged and they have no common unity, there really is no community. Everybody's pulling at threads. And the police know that they could come in there and create mischief. It also goes back to the sense of us, like you said, going back in time. I think a lot of us, even where Xavier was saying he's on point, what can happen, That's having faith in that you doing the right thing is going to lead you to the right results. Because if a cop pulls you over and you really haven't done anything wrong, he's still an authoritative figure. You have to place faith that he's going to allow you to go instead of saying, you know what, well, forget it. You didn't do anything wrong, but being black tonight, I'm shooting you in the head. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, because there are instances where cop, when you start putting, it's like a parachute. Like, you have to have faith that it's going to open when you draw the string. With these people, because it's just that serious. If you don't place faith, it doesn't matter how well equipped we are, because if it's either you're going to run or pull over.
Yeah.
If you feel like you're equipped, you don't know what's in this man's head when he's walking up on your car. It's nighttime. You got your light on in your car, your paperwork in your hand. Your hands is on the steering wheel. You got the window down. You speaking in a nice tone. You've been polite. You're being cooperative. And the next thing you know, he's drawing his weapon because you're a black man.
Wow. Aaron, do you think, and even Xavier or Javetta, do you think that we have given up certain permission or we have given out something in our character that says that this is okay to do? This is okay to shoot our children down in the street. It's okay. It's okay for two men who were down there, I believe that was in Tennessee, I can't remember the state right now, it might have been Texas, who got, you know, they're working with the young black guy, and they decide that tonight we're going to tie him to the back of the pickup truck and do 360s in the ground with him and drag him among the streets until his head pops off. Have we said or given permission that this is okay behavior?
We haven't done anything to affect America. Like I was saying, like you have to affect America. Burning stuff in your communities, dragging even Caucasian people out their car, being none of that means nothing to America because they know they have a force that can stop that in any given time that they want to. You know what I mean? So that really means nothing. What you have to do is you have to really start shutting down industry. Like, seriously, that's the only way that's the only thing that America respects.
Can I jump in and just say it also reflects the people that are in charge that are making these decisions and that are making these laws. Like in certain states, you know, they still have those people that were in the back of the day that didn't like certain races of people, and they're in charge. You know, so it stems from that. It depends on who you have in those positions also on how they react to certain situations. They may be fine with someone pulling a black man behind a truck, but they got to portray, you know, equality. But deep down, they may not feel that way.
Hmm.
Yeah. Javetta, you were going to say something?
I have a problem with it. I think a problem that I see is, number one, all of our good deeds and everything that's going right in our communities is not getting enough notice. And then I also wanted to say that I lost my train of thought, but I don't think that it is okay, but the fact that America is viewing us as the minority that can't get it right, they already have this mindset in their head that regardless of what we do, we can never get ahead, or we can. So they, to me, I feel like we are viewed overall as a minority in every sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that. And so what we have to do is we get angry when things like this happen. Of course we do. But what do we do to actually become the change that's needed in our communities? Because it does start at home. We have black-on-black crime and all of that stuff going on as well. So what can we do within our communities to ensure a future for our children, for our young men? What is it that we can do? If the focus can maybe shift to that versus where it's at right now, I don't know. I think that a change can come. And
I think it has a lot to do with understanding and education. Like if we don't realize that we're in this war, if we don't like you guys have brought some things to my attention that I just didn't. I mean, I feel like I'm capable and I keep my eye out. But like we said earlier, you know, it won't matter if the other party is going to do wrong regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, then the rub is, How do we change this? Like, what do we do? And I think maybe what can help it is education. You know, teaching our kids, teaching our friends and family that, you know, we've got to be the change that we want to see and try to affect change any way we can. I'm not sure how we can start that, but we've got to take that first step.
Yes, I agree. Aaron, what I want to do right quick is I want to take a caller. Can you take that 570 real quick before we bring Quentin in, because he's going to also bring more light onto the subject, because he's, you know, he produced the film, and we're going to get, you know, more out of Javetta and more out of Xavier, and you see how they were able to mesh these different characters together for this project. So if you'll take that call, then we'll read his bio and get him on the line.
So I'm taking 570. Is the call I'm taking?
Yes.
Okay. 570, you are live with the Right and Royalty crew. Good evening. How are you and who are we speaking with?
Hello, this is Keisha. How's everybody?
How are you doing?
Hey,
what's good, Keisha?
I'm doing great. I love this topic. I'm really invested in this topic. I have two young boys, and I live in a white community. I might say something that's kind of harsh. You have to do with reality. A lot of black people are now being a house nigger, meaning that we want to believe in the fairy tale, that we equal and we did all the fighting. We're not equal. And if you raise your children thinking that, then it's going to be a lot of Tavon Martin cases. You have to let them know when Johnny go to a store, he can steal. And you can be honest. When the cops come in, they're going to grab your son first. That's the reality of the situation. And once you do it in reality, you can start making changes. Like my sons, they have friends that are Caucasians, but they can't move like them. And I'm not going to sit here and tell them, well, you can move like them. When your friend Johnny riding down the block in the car and the cops go past, he don't get scared. And he know his mom, well, you know, it's okay. A black man, you don't know. At the end of that ticket, it could be your life or you going to jail. That's the reality of it. It's not right, but that's the reality of it.
For real.
And I really, you know, I saw that case a lot. And it's not only Tavon Martin case. There have been other cases. I call his case the Rose, like Rosa Parks. He was just a case that we could beat up and mad about. But it was a lot of him before he came out. Like Rosa Parks, she was the first black woman who said, I didn't want to sit there. She just was good for TV or for the marching right then. So we got to think about, not I'm big on this. My kids have friends. They my friends, too. I talk to them. Some of their kids, they call me mom. That's cool because I also know that my son will be outside with you. And some of these, he don't tell mommy or daddy because he has a mommy and daddy at home. So he might feel more comfortable telling you. So I have to parent you, too, to make sure that my son, y'all walk home together, y'all both make it inside the house together. And that's what we have to do as a community. We can't – it would be so nice if we said, well, you know, times has changed, but it's still the same. That back door and that – they don't want us there. And it's like, just like you said, the race card, everybody know the house wins.
Yep.
There's no such thing having the race card. You go to the casino, you might win one hand, but at the end of the day, the house won't win. And black people need to understand that this is America. They stole, they raped, they murdered to keep this thing. You think they're going to let us just walk upon it? No, they just reminded us that, yo, we don't care about your kids getting killed.
Well,
we don't care, and nothing you can do about it. That's what they're trying to say. There's nothing you can do about it.
Wow. That's powerful. That's powerful. We thank you for that insight. And please continue to listen to the show. We're going to go ahead and bring some more to light about that subject.
If I could say
goodbye.
One thing,
okay.
I have
bye,
to kind of agree with Keisha, only because I live in a predominantly white neighborhood, and my son is younger, and he's in middle school. And it's hard to talk about race with him because in this day and age, how Nene was talking about being desensitized, the kids are desensitized. They don't talk about slavery as much as they used to. They don't talk about racism as much as they used to. So when the kids are in school and they have their friends, and when you have to sit down and have the conversations with him, you know, it's a little difficult because he's like, oh, mom, and I have to let him know that, no, this is what it is. You know, you have two strikes, the fact that you're black and you a male, and you have to pay attention to what's going on. You cannot assume what's going on and think that just because that's your friend that this is what it's going to be, because that's not how it is. And it's a little hard because it makes me come off as I'm being negative. Because at school, they make everybody, you know, with kumbaya and everybody is holding hands and, you know, we're all equal. But at the same time, when I have to give him what the reality is, I'm coming off as a negative person because I have to really let him know that, you know, the world is kind of different than the eyes that you're looking out of. And society deems things a little bit differently than what you're seeing.
That's true, and I think that along with what Keisha was saying is the preparing them long before they are in those ages. Case in point, because I am such a strong advocate for making sure that my daughter knows history and that she knows where she came from so she can know where she's going, I've always talked to her. I started talking to her in the hospital when she came out of my womb. I put her in my arms and I put my mouth to her ear and began to give her all of the history from way back in the day all the way up until now, who she was. And I did that on a daily basis, continuously. When she started school at 3 years old, I was living in a community that was predominantly white. Matter of fact, I was the only black person in the neighborhood. And because I'm so light-skinned, they thought that I was, half black, half white. They wanted to introduce me to anybody in the neighborhood that may have been of the same situation, so to speak, because everyone had to let me know who else in the community may have been half black or half white. And at 3 years old, when my daughter was in preschool, she's playing with the little boy, Caucasian little boy, and they're playing nicely. And the little boy got angry because he wanted something that she had, and he called her a nigger. And the teachers and everybody froze. One, because they know I do not play. They knew they had to tell me about it and that I was going to have something to say. So they were very afraid immediately. Secondly, they were very impressed because she put her hand on his back and looked him in his face and said, no, sweetie, that's what they used to call us. They don't call us that anymore. And she continued on playing with her toys. They were shocked. and how she was able to handle the dynamic, but I knew when I had her in my womb that she was a black woman being born into America and that she had to have certain things taught to her. I did not do it with kid gloves. I did not wait until she was 10, 12, 13 years old and she started seeing different things on television. And I think that that is a big problem in America with parents who are so cushiony about raising children, especially black male children. I don't care where you raise them at. I don't care which country you raise them in. They need to know their history. They need to know their past. They need to understand the sacrifices, the bloody sacrifices, the deadly sacrifices that were made so that they could walk about and have education and have jobs and different things of that nature. And if you wait to prepare them, you will be preparing a grave for them, or you will be preparing a false illusion of life for them. So in that aspect, I think that people should definitely teach and train, especially with everything that's going on in America. Don't wait until your children have friends to start explaining the differences between them and their friend. Those are conversations that should be had daily at home. They should be putting things out daily. They should be putting things out all the time, making them watch the news. And don't be afraid to tell them, you know, what's going on. You know, sometimes as parents we think, oh, they're not ready. Let me try to wait. You wait till they, you know what I'm saying, get caught. Like I said, my daughter, 3 years old, get called a nigger in preschool. Who's teaching this child? What is this child learning at home? I don't know, but I promise you, mine's is learning the opposite subject of that, and that's what it has to be. We're going to go ahead on and bring Quentin in so he can bring more light to this. Who has his bio so we can get that read, because I'm ready to hear what he has to say about this subject.
Okay. Quentin QL Littlejohn was born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago. Quentin started to produce music at the age of 15 with no formal training, teaching himself to play the piano and use current technology to craft the sounds in his mind to instrumental expression. In the fall of 2001, Quentin was accepted to North Carolina A&T State University, majoring in broadcast production. Exposure to academic resources and like-minded artists pushed Quentin further into the world of music production and broadcasting. First, he began interning at the school, at the college radio station, and then he moved on to work for Radio Disney for almost 5 years. At the height of his professional progress in music and production and sound engineering, Quentin developed a keen eye for videography and photography, seeking to sharpen his unique artistic perspective to film and motion pictures. Quentin stepped away from his career pursuits in 2007 and started to study digital film and editing full-time at the Art Institute. Touched by the tragic death of Trayvon Martin and the strong similarities to his memories as a teenager, Quentin constructed a script that humanized the tragedy in a way that only a true artist can. Quentin and his business partner at On Faith Entertainment took on the challenge of creating their first independent film, Journey Home, written and directed and filmed by Quentin personally. Quentin looks forward to using the film to promote a broader conversation on the value of young life and the fact that everyone deserves a second chance. Aaron, why don't you drop that beat so we can bring in Quentin, Q Will.
Yes.
Littlejohn.
But I know gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I couldn't last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, a long time coming, but I know the change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
That's powerful. That sends so many emotions through you when you hear that. Yes, mm-hmm. It really, really does.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's what we're hoping for, and that's what we're praying, that this, you know, this movie and this project is guided, you know, by the spirits that have positive energy around them, so that people can see that someone wants to make a change. Someone wants to highlight the event that happened around this young man's life, so that, you know, we don't forget that it happened, and we don't forget that it can happen. Do we have Quentin on the line?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Yes. Hi, Quentin. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. Really, really honored to have you in the clubhouse tonight. We have our host on here. We've been chopping it up. We have your wonderful, wonderful cast on here. They've been representing very well about the film. We would definitely like to hear from you, you know, the creator of this project, the producer of this project, what you had in mind when you decided to take this journey. I'm going to keep using journey. And what do you want the viewers to feel from this?
Well, as far as what I had in mind, when I first decided to write the film, it was probably a little bit after the trial had ended. And it was just the way the media began to characterize Trayvon and started to create this personality that almost made it feel like he deserved to die because he was a gangbanger thug. And, you know, basing it off of partial information, Facebook pictures, quotes here and there, but it was that, and then I started looking at myself, and I said, well, if I had died at 17, I would have been that same way. I'd have been characterized that same exact way. I would have been that same way, probably worse. I mean, I was doing a lot worse than he was doing. But, yeah, I mean, that in itself, and then, you know, you would have never thought that, hey, this person graduated college, has his own place, has a kid, has a family, has a job and pursuing his own career. You would have never thought that at 17 in my life. It was no way, not in the world. So that in itself made me think, well, you don't know what this kid could have been. You know, you don't
right.
know what this kid was aspiring to do. So I decided to write a script about it and just put it together and put something together to show. You know, we never know what's happening behind the scenes in somebody's life. You know, you
right.
could see somebody, you could see a janitor, but you don't know that they're studying for their doctorate. So you don't know what's going on in somebody's life. You don't know who somebody really is, especially if you're basing it off of, you know, little things like Facebook. You know, we didn't have Facebook when I was 17. If I was 17,
right.
I probably would have had those same type of pictures. You would have seen pictures of me throwing up gang signs. You would have seen pictures of me, you know, throwing the middle finger and all kinds of crazy pictures. But we didn't have Facebook, so nobody knows.
Right.
But for myself and a lot of others, you know, we got to live past our 17. We got to see past that point in our lives where we were making those bad decisions to get to a turning point to where we could change and become who we ultimately are. A lot of kids, Trayvon, Jordan Davis, a lot of kids didn't get to see past that for stupid reasons, for lack of a better word. You know, I think that in situations such as those, regardless of what the situation is, if a person has a firearm, then they are in control of the situation at the end of the day. So regardless of what the situation is and what's going on, if you have a firearm and the other person does not, you are in control. You know, granted, we don't necessarily know. Everybody can speculate as to what exactly happened on that night. And what I did was just an interpretation of what I may have thought could have happened. It wasn't necessarily what I thought based on any kind of facts. I just put together a scenario that I liked. But, you know, whoever has that gun is in control of that situation. So they're the one that's set to be the mature one. And so you have to understand, by carrying a firearm and by being licensed to carry a firearm, you know, you've been deemed to be mature enough to do so and to understand the situation, whether or not you were getting beat up or not. You can pull out your firearm and say, hey, listen, we're going to stop this right now. So, I mean, there were choices, and I don't like that people's choice gets taken away from them and people's future gets taken away from them on a daily basis. And we don't know what these people are. We just look at them for what they were then. And it's just shedding light to show that, you know, everybody deserves a chance to change. Regardless of where you are now, where you are, you know, if you're 16, 17, 18 listening to this, you know, regardless of where you are, what your life is, you still deserve a chance to change. And you have that in you because you're going to reach that turning point into your life and where you're going to realize, you know what, I can either go left or right. And everybody has those moments. Everybody has that in their life. And you can change everything that you are in 1 second. And so with that 1 second, you know, you can go down a road where it's parallel to you losing your life, or you can start down a road to where you can become something that you never would have thought you were. So that's what motivated me to actually do the film. What I hope people get out of it is just to look at themselves and be thankful for who they are now and the fact that they got to live past the 17. And if they are teenagers or if they are in their, quote-unquote, 17 moment where they're just not making the greatest decisions, understand that you still have an opportunity to change. The change is possible.
Yeah, I agree. And the sad part of all of that is he won't have that. You know, Trayvon won't have that opportunity for change or to progress, you know. And at that age, you don't really even understand life, you know, as a whole. You know what I'm saying? That whole consequences aspect isn't as prevalent in your mind as it should be. You know, you're at that age where you're almost grown, you think you're grown, and you're making decisions and things for your life, or you're trying to move into that character of manhood or womanhood, you know, but to have something stolen away from you like that is harsh. And then you talked about the responsibility of weapons, and it seems like that has gotten totally away from everybody in America being responsible. And the main people who fight daily to keep gun laws so relaxed, oftentimes it is their children who are doing these types of acts. I mean, you look in the news, you see the guy, he goes into a daycare and kills kids, or a school and kills his peers because he's upset that day, or whatever the circumstances is that the media will portray that particular race of people, why they did that with the gun. However, it's a total different law and a total different bias within our communities, and you look at the fact that the laws and stuff are so relaxed, the people who are buying them have to be filtering them through the communities, because in black communities you don't have people, shall I say, who can even get a gun because of whatever their circumstances have been in life. So
Right.
You know, these gun laws being so relaxed and people having so much permission to do that, I think it also makes them think that they have permission to do things like what Zimmerman is portrayed to have done. Just, you know, hey, I'm protecting this area. I got my gun. I got permission to have it. And I'm going to shoot to kill, and I'll deal with the consequences later, if there are any consequences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, I think society has flipped a little bit, because what kids were portraying in the early 90s, well, all through the 90s and maybe early 2000s, was the hip-hop culture. Well, and the hip-hop culture at that point in time was made up of predominantly people who came from the street life and really started rapping or doing hip-hop or, you know, just as a supplement until it started making more money. They were still selling drugs, holding guns. So that in itself made people, white America, feel like they were threatened, because a lot of African Americans, especially young African Americans, carried guns, whether they got them legally or not. So through time, they have educated themselves, white America, as far as getting protection, getting guns the legal way, making sure that they're protecting themselves, because they don't know, especially if what they see, you know, white person may look at BET, you know, 20% less, 20% of their time as far as when they watch TV, black person may look at BET, you know, 40, 50%. But if they're looking at it for just a split second and they see somebody who portrays a thug, they say, oh, that's what a thug looks like. So, but now if you look at the way hip-hop culture has changed now, the hip-hop culture and these rappers and these guys aren't really portraying carrying guns. They're more pop and more happy, and it's not as gangster, quote unquote, to say, as it was. So you have kids still portraying what they see on TV, but white America is still looking at them the exact same way. So these kids are not carrying guns, but they still look like they might be.
Right.
So
right.
White America is saying, well, I'm protecting myself either way. Because again, we're gonna judge everybody based on self preservation. So whatever you see, you're going to say, okay, I see this person walking down the street. If they look dangerous to me, I'm going to preserve my life so I may cross the street. I may lock my doors. I may, you know, go to the other side, go into the store, go. We're going to judge people based on self-preservation. If I see somebody that looks intimidating and they look like they may cause me harm, or if I have my child with me, I may go a different route. I may turn around. Just because of that. Mm-hmm. So the same thing with white America, black America, everyone, I think, judges people off of self-preservation. And so what they see and what they're basing their things off of is what they see on TV, what they see that we do. And so they say, well, we got to protect ourselves. But I think that the hip-hop culture has softened up so much that they don't realize that these young 17, 18-year-olds, they're not carrying guns. They're sagging just because they see somebody else sagging, and they're not even sagging baggy jeans anymore. It's tight jeans. So it's a completely different culture now. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter to white America. It's pretty much the same thing as hey, I'm self-preserving myself. So, you know,
you
get those people having those guns all the time.
You brought up culture and the depiction of blacks within that culture. However, you know, in just over 40 to 50 years, we're only about 50 years up from the lunch counters and the equal education and the voting. And, you know, they were still hanging and shooting you down the streets, and black people in that day and time were wearing suits and had on shoes and nice hats. So I don't think that it would matter whether we were dressed up or not dressed up. I think that we still would be the prey. I think that we still would be the ones that would be targeted, regardless to that fact, because we've had times in history when there weren't any saggy pants and there weren't any radical behavior among blacks. They were trying to be as calm as possible and as docile as possible and try not to ruffle anybody's feathers. And even in this day and time, these young people are expressing what they feel is relevant to them.
Go ahead.
I agree to a degree what you said about the hip hop thing. This is what I do agree with what you said about the hip hop thing, about as far as people emulating. And then, you know, also the beginning part of what you said about it being a little harder back in the days, and because people were actually speaking from them circumstances. These kids now are more so practicing to be entertainers at home, thinking this is their dream from home to practice. Some of these guys were rapping as a pastime, like you said, as they were selling drugs, and then realized, hey, I can get money off of this too. And beyond that, we had our conscious rap, where at times, you know, people weren't wearing chains and hoodies. They were wearing beads and medallions because that's what rappers were wearing. And it wasn't that the rappers turned the culture into the hardcore look. It was the industry, the American industry, the white American industry that needed this image to be projected in these neighborhoods where young black kids were actually being taught awareness, not only through the music but through the people there. Because the people in those communities were dressing like that, wearing the beads, the medallions. They had the African pieces around their neck. They knew their history. That was being talked about inside the communities. The white man was outside of that. They couldn't really touch it. So then they had to evolve hip-hop to get a way in and just keep it destructive. I agree on as far as the image thing. But as far as, like Nene said, the way we look, the only thing that is really the concern of the way we look is the fact that we're black. It's not what we're wearing, because like they just feel like they can kill us, or
And just to interject, I think the fact that you're African American does play a part, but at the same token, the way that you dress plays a major deal as well. I mean, just to your point, you know, back in the 60s when people were wearing suits. You know, yes, they were getting hung and shot at and things of that nature, but you got to understand, anytime people do anything for change and it's working for African Americans, death is the result of it. If we can look at the history of that, that, you know, started from, you know, Lincoln. Lincoln was assassinated because he did something that changed for African Americans. Kennedy was killed because change was happening for African Americans. Martin Luther King was killed because change was happening for African Americans. But the thing about Malcolm X, he was killed by his own people because he wasn't doing anything to change African Americans to, as far as with the white people. He was changing them as far as making African Americans and white people separate. That's what they wanted, so they were fine with him. He may have caused a couple of blips here and there, but he made people look at Martin Luther King a little more. It was like, okay, well, these African Americans following Malcolm X are quite violent. Martin Luther King is peaceful, but Martin Luther King was bringing about change. So when you start to bring about change, then that's when typically death follows. And so that's why we don't – I feel like that's why we don't have a forefront leader in change right now, because of the possible consequences of it. And going back to as far as dressing is something that the first thing that people notice about you. Now, one thing I'd say to everyone, you have to understand you can wear what you want to wear, but you have to understand the consequences of that in this day and age. So if you want to wear a hoodie, understand that as an African-American male, how they're going to look at you wearing that hoodie. And if you're wearing a suit, understand how they're going to look at you wearing that suit. Because if we can't get heard, then nothing's going to change. We have to put ourselves in a position to be heard first. And if we can't work our way up to the position to be heard, whatever that way is, it's many different avenues to get heard, but you have to put yourself in a position to be heard. And then when you can be heard, then you can start to be an advocate for change. And a lot of that is the way that you dress. I mean, if you're in the office space, they always tell you dress for the job that you want. So
the average millionaire today,
average
black millionaire today has a hoodie and a chain on their neck. Baby from Cash Money would actually look out of place showing up to an executive meeting in a suit. Some people would think something was wrong with him. The average black millionaire today wears a hoodie and a chain.
The average black millionaire is not going to be baby, though.
That's why I said the average black millionaire. The average black millionaire today wears a chain and a hoodie.
That's not necessarily a fact. You got to look and see all the black millionaires that are out there. That's not necessarily a fact. These are the millionaires that you see in your face. There are tons of millionaires that you don't see.
All right. Well,
on the flip side of that,
the white newscaster in the suit is talking like the black millionaire with the hoodie on when he's delivering your news now. That's still image. That's what I'm saying. It's just black and white. Like, honestly, like, people have to really get to that point and stop trying to curve it. Like, it's not black and white. And if black people would do this, it would be better. It don't matter what black people do. And as long as black people are in America, black people are prey.
But that's the mentality that's going to keep us stuck if we walk around saying that we're prey all the time.
Yeah, I think so too. If we allow ourselves to become a victim, we don't make any moves to start making and affecting any change. We start walking around like, okay, well, nothing's going to change. I'm a victim. This is the way it's going to be. Then what's going to motivate that person to be that change?
I'm not saying think you're a victim. I'm saying be aware that you're prey.
Just because you're prey,
that doesn't mean that you're the victim. I'm not saying take on a position of being the victim. I'm saying be aware of who you are. Stop trying to act like, listen, I'm black and things could be equal for me, or as long as I act like this as a black man, and then this is going to be right for me. No, you black in America is already a problem. It's inherent.
I agree, Aaron, but I disagree at the same time. Only because us as a black community, there's a problem across the board in the black community itself. If we are not respecting ourselves, taking care of ourselves, and being productive in our own community, how are we going to expect outsiders to look in and feel or do the things or act how we're saying we want them to act when we don't do it for ourselves? It's a tragedy when a young adult is killed, but 9 times out of 10, a young black man is killed by another young black man.
Unless we get our own community in order,
the outside world is not going to change because we don't have our own house in order.
It's the same thing in white communities. Black people ain't in white communities killing whites predominantly. Whites are killing whites in white communities predominantly. Like, what you're saying is totally, it has no real bearing, because when you start breaking down the numbers, you're going to clearly see more whites are killing whites in white communities and more blacks are killing blacks in black communities. That's just the way it is. That's how demographics are set up. Because blacks don't live in white communities.
That may very well be the case, but if we want to be the change that we want to see, that's the only way that we're going to be able to start the change. We have to become that change. We can't say, because we're not in their communities or whatever, that we're not doing what they're doing, that there's nothing that we can do. We have to be the change that we want to see. Let me ask you a question.
The change that you're speaking about is education. You've pushed that to the forefront. 60 years ago, blacks were marching, screaming for education, got it, things are going on, and now we still back to the same thing, saying we need change. So you know what that means? We need to change that plan. That plan ain't working. Like, for real, that's just keeping you docile. You keep thinking that something's going to change. You have to change things. You have to make things happen. Things don't just pop into existence because. Like, you have to really start executing things and making things happen.
We've been working on this same plan.
It's not working.
That's what we got to teach. I mean, apparently we're not teaching that concept that you got to put the work in. You got a lot of people who want this, and this, and they are not willing to put the work in. Whatever that work may be, they don't respect the goal enough to put the work in. And that's what the issue. We're not teaching that you got to go ahead and get the sweat. You got to bleed. You got to cry to get what you want.
And I'm going to say this.
And the thing
will
change.
Hold that thought, Alicia, because I'm going to jump in and say this. Change is good. Yes, it is. And for every change, there is a strong consequence. However, with black people in America, it's like this. And I'm going to ask you, Alicia. You say, I want to build a house. Tell me what you need to build a house, Alicia. Tell me that. What do you need to build a house?
What do I need to build a house?
Yeah, I want you to build a house. You tell me what's the first thing you need to build a house. What do you need?
The first thing I need to build a house is land.
All right, ask me for the land.
But you're going to want money for the land as well.
Ask me for the land.
Can I have the land?
No, you cannot. What else do you need to build a house?
Well, if I have the right amount of money, your yes, mm-hmm. your no will always be a yes.
It will never be a yes. And I'll tell you this, and I'm going to tell you why. You want to ask for change. You want change. But let me tell you something. You're living behind enemy lines. Don't ever get fooled. Don't ever get fooled. Don't ever get fooled into thinking that what it is that you want and what it is you aspire for and what it is that you desire, your enemy is just going to roll over and give it to you. This is America. We did not volunteer to come here. They brought us here.
But the thing about change is changing your mindset.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
If you still think the same way, don't matter what you change.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
It's like getting a shower and putting on dirty clothes.
You're talking about getting a shower. You're talking about getting a shower. The same people who you want to get in the shower for, you pay rent to. So they say, no, you don't live here. They own the water. So if they say you ain't got no water, you ain't got
none. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is,
you can't have no money.
You have to change the way you are thinking. It's just like getting in the shower. If you get in the shower and you put on the same dirty clothes, the only thing you did was get in the shower. You didn't do anything else. And that's my thing about change. Change is wonderful, and we do need change, but it starts in our community. And if we want things to be differently, not only do we have to do things differently, but we have to think differently. We cannot think with the same mind, or we will never get anywhere. We will keep spinning our wheels, going around in a circle, doing the same thing. Because we
we're having this conversation about Trayvon Martin. And Trayvon Martin is just one of hundreds of black men who still get murdered, lynched, ran down, shot down in the streets. I'm quite sure that his parents had a mind of change. I'm quite sure they were not thinking that when my baby got up this morning, he would be laying in the street. That his case is one case. One case. I need you to tell me what has changed. What has changed? What has changed? Nothing has changed. The fact that a man can come and shoot a black man down in the street like a dog and go
that's
home and still... And still have the ability to walk the street and look in faces, still have the ability to love, still have the ability to have a relationship, still have the ability to have children, still have the ability to travel, while another person's life who was cut down at 17 years old has none of those abilities. And he's just one case. So what is it that needs to change? And it was not a black man that shot him down. So what needs to change? What I'm asking.
I'm talking back.
Wait, let the guest go. Go ahead, Quentin.
Here's the thing. One, nothing can happen if we, and this is the same thing I tell Christian believers. I'm like, nothing can happen if you sit in a room arguing with each other all day. Nothing can happen if we sit here arguing whose change is better.
Mm-hmm.
See, number one, we got to put ourselves in some kind of position to be heard, because you all have great views on change, but who's hearing them? It's not one white person listening to this station. So
that's
who's
the
hearing
problem right
it,
there.
Is the thing. Who's hearing that? We got to get ourselves in position for somebody to hear you and multiple people to hear you so that things can change for the betterment of a community, as opposed to, you know, we've heard the saying, you know, it starts with you. And it does. You know, it starts with you. You can start making a difference here and there. But do what you have to do. Like I said, avenues to get to a position to be heard are different. I truly believe that rapper Tupac Shakur got himself in a position to be heard, and in his final days, the lyrics and the things that he was saying became more and more profound and more educational to African Americans, and obviously, you know, his result, his ending result. But I think that he got himself in a position to be heard. So whatever you have to do to get in a position to be heard, and that's what I think we should do. When people say it starts with you, it starts with you as far as making yourself to get to a position to be heard. So if that's working your way up in your corporate ladder and your job until you're the CEO or until you're the boss over somebody to where you now people have to listen to you, then that's you working to be heard. If that's you getting to the NBA and now you get interviews and public interviews, you hear people thank Jesus all the time and say, you know, they love Christ and stuff, and so more people can, hey, okay, that's what he's about. People can hear you now. So get yourself in a position to be heard. Work hard to get in a position that people can hear you. Nina, you have a radio station. You've worked hard to get here. Now people are hearing you. So it's up to you to use this wisely as you can, like you're having shows and discussions about things like this. It's working hard to get in positions. You know, we worked hard on this film. Now everybody is seeing it. Now we're having multiple interviews. We're having multiple premieres and showings in different places and states. We're going down to Florida this weekend. You know, it's multiple people that are seeing this because now we've put ourselves in a position to be heard. Now people are wondering, you know, what was the movie about? What is the Me at 17 campaign? Now they're asking these questions. See, when you mm-hmm. put yourself in a position to be heard, then you can start stating your beliefs, and then people can start hearing you, and then people can start saying, oh, well, that makes sense. Because it's a lot of educated black people about, you know, what's going on in the system, and this is what it is, and this is where we are, and this is what's going on. But who are you telling? You're not telling anybody except black people. You're only telling the people that you see on the block, the people you see on the corner, and they listen to it, and they're like, oh, he's cool, and then they go off and never think about it again. So we can't sit here and really argue with each other about it. I mean, change is change. No change is better than somebody else's change. We're all trying to get to a better place. And like you said before, we didn't start here. We were brought here. So we have to understand the rules and regulations that were set by the people who brought us here so that we can win. We can't win by trying to break the rules, change the rules, because clearly you die by doing that. So
we gotta find
out how to play the game, and then we can flip the game.
So if you look at the president, I mean, he shows up in a suit, and they openly tell him to shut up. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You look at this black man; he's educated, he's powerful, and you know he done got to this position, and they are still very disrespectful. You have people who won't even call him his title. They'll just say Obama. You know what I'm saying? But every other president going all the way back, they are president so-and-so, president so-and-so. And they'll say, yeah, today Obama spoke about such and such and such. Why does he lose his respect? You know what I'm saying? He's standing there respectfully.
Well, we know why. We clearly know why, because he's African-American. But at the same time, he is the president, so we've made a step there. And another thing, anytime he want to talk, we have to listen. He can shut down all the TV so that we can watch what he say. So, I mean, he is in a position to speak, and I think he'll be more influential in the African-American community when he's not a president anymore. Because obviously as a president, you have to think about everyone. But when he's a former president, then he can focus on African-Americans a little more than he may want to or may can right now. So, I mean, we still have to look at where we've come. I know things are tough now. But if you talk to somebody who lived in the 50s and the 60s, they're looking at it like, shoot, we came a heck of a long way. Now, there's still more to get done, but we've came a heck of a long way. Because I know right now I couldn't have survived in the 50s and 60s.
You know why I think you could have, Quentin? Because the lines were drawn, and you knew which side of the line you was on. But now when we send our children out, when we send our black men out, you know what I'm saying? When your woman said, you know, goodbye, baby, I'm going to see you later, that's a hope I see you later. That's not exactly I'll see you later. You know what I'm saying? And that damn time you knew what the line was. You knew what was expected. And I think that that is one of the biggest misconceptions for blacks in America, is believing that there is no line. Mm-hmm. And I am so looking forward to this film. You know, I'm really looking forward to it, and I can't wait. I'm really hoping that a lot of our youth, a lot of our young black males will go out and watch this film, and they'll grab a hold of it, and they'll grab something, you know, personally that they can hold on to from the story. That, you know, Trayvon Martin was just like any other young black male, like you said, with problems, you know, with growing pains, you know, the things you have to go through as a young teenager, you know, coming into life and having, you know, young love and going to school and trying to struggle to find his place in the world, and then have his life snatched away from him. I know emotions have flown back and forth with this topic, because it touches everybody, you know, mm-hmm. in a different way. You know, we have two mothers of young boys on here, so it touches them a certain way. We have Aaron, who is a parent of a young man who is doing time because of the situation in our communities. You know, me, myself, my father did 20-something years in prison for murder, and, you know, the cops beat him for 3 days into a confession, and he ended up spending half of his life, because he was a political prisoner, in prison. So it comes from a different place in everybody on here. You know, you have Xavier, who's still young, and has come up in a different society where things are more comfortable and accepted, and you can look on the television and you can see yourself. You know what I'm saying? We all come from a generation where you couldn't really see yourself on television. You know, you every show you saw, you weren't in it. It was like black people didn't even exist. You know, you already had black and white television, and then you had no black. So, you know, we're in a society now where things seem so comfortable, and everybody's all holding hands and yay, kumbaya, until somebody gets dead. And then now it's like, oh, my goodness, we got to head for the hills and change. Let's find some change. But I am so blessed that you're going to share your gifts with the nation, and I hope that they really grow and learn a lot from the film that you're going to put out. And I hope that I'm at one of those premieres, because I would definitely love to meet you and, you know, be able to have, you know, some more of these types of conversations. Is there anything else that you want to highlight in this subject before we go out of time, or even Xavier? Anything else about the film?
I would like to say that with all the change that we speak of and that we want to get out of life and out of our own personal development, we have to, I think it's important for us to go into with the understanding that it's not going to be easy, that it's not going to be an overnight thing, that we have to respect the goal enough to realize that it's going to take some work, and just go into that understanding that, because it'll do wonders for you. If you just come back to the fact that it's not going to be easy, it'll do wonders for your longevity and your ability to keep moving forward. So.
Mhm. And that's what we need. You know, we definitely have to. You know, it's sad enough. It's sad enough that these things are still happening to our children and to our black men. You know, even when you're watching different things, black men are just popping up missing. Like, who's stealing black men? Like, what is going on? With our young men, you know, it's a lot going on in this country, and it has to be highlighted, it has to be spoke about. If you have an opportunity to be someone who's on television, who's on radio, I definitely agree with the putting your voice out there, saying what's really on your mind, not what's publicly accepted, but actually saying something that may strike someone. You never know who's listening, and they may say, wow. You know what I'm saying? I believe in that. Let me try to be one of the ones that brings about this change. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or strike some type of dialogue, you know, within the communities that we can start having and sharing, you know, these ideas and these different focus on different things. Aaron or Tony or Alicia, do you have any final thoughts or anything that you would like to leave before our wonderful, wonderful guest leave the show? Tony?
First, it's been an emotional show, you know. Like you said, having two sons the age of when this happened. But it just gives you thought, you know. It gives you thought to you don't know what's going to happen when your young man walks into the street, whether he's going to come home or not. But I'm really glad that he's putting out this film, and I really hope a lot of people go out and see it and support it. And change has to start somewhere, you know, and everybody has their role to play to make that change happen.
Yes. Aaron?
Yeah, I definitely would like to thank all of you for coming on and sharing your time with us. And I definitely hope that the film does well. It is definitely needed, something that the youth need to see. Like you said, it doesn't. This incident doesn't need to be forgotten and just pushed to the back. And I wish you all the success in the world. And where are you guys going to be in Florida this weekend?
It's going to be at Florida Memorial University in Miami.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Wow.
That's why cool. I'm in Florida. I may see you guys. Possibly.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is it like are you holding a convention or something there?
It's going to be we're going to show the film, and then it's going to be an open forum, kind of like what we're doing now, but just an open forum about the film and me at 17.
Wow.
Okay. Is it open to the public, or is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely come by. It's like I said, it's at Florida Memorial University. They are passing out flyers now. They're starting to promote this week. I think it's going to be in their either student union or their auditorium. I think it's in their auditorium. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And do you know what time it starts? Schedule.
I think the program starts at 10 in the morning.
Okay.
If you can, Quentin, can you please either email me that information so that we can blast it so our readers as well as our listeners that are in that area, if they're in that area, they could try to come out and see that premiere?
Sure. I can email that to you.
Yes, that would be really good. I wish I was in Florida because I would surely go. We'll be up here in Georgia trying to do these signings. But I'm looking forward to meeting you soon. If it's up north, please keep us informed of the different dates so that we can blast them, because we are going to continue to follow this journey all the way up until we're actually able to see the film, because I definitely want to see the film. Xavier, did you have anything that you wanted to share before you left the line? We know that Javetta had to get back to work, so she graciously slid off, but she sent her love on her way out the door. But she enjoyed the show. She wanted me to extend. Xavier, do you have anything you would like to leave us with?
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for having us on. It's been an eye-opening conversation, and I hope you all enjoy the film. We're really looking forward to the feedback.
Yes, I hope
sure.
I hope that people come out and support the film, you know, come out and support it as much as possible wherever, you know, they hear that you guys are at, that they come out and they try to hear, you know, what it is that he is conveying to us through the voices of you all, because he picked you for a reason, and you were able to bring to life his mind. And I am so interested to see how each person in the film brought his mind to life and was able to take his piece of art and make people love it. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. As authors, we write, and we are only in the book, so we don't have anything on film that can depict how we feel. But when you can take and move people around and manipulate their character so that they convey the emotion and everything that you're looking for, that's brilliant. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. And Quentin, we thank you for sharing your mind and your spirit with us. And we pray that your journey continues to be strong and that this message continues to get out there so that we can invoke those changes in our youth, in our black men, just to bring some conscious mind to the nation, you know, to the nation, and that people will move differently. And maybe they will think, like Xavier said, think before you do things. And you may have said it as well, you know, what would happen if that didn't happen? You know, how would a young man's life been celebrated and been able to have family and you know, and love and everything like that? So we thank you so much for that and being a part of our explosive conversation. We do that, you know, I practice the law, so I don't get to argue as much as I like to, so I try to do it on the show every so often.
It helps me. Yes, Leisha, did you have anything that you would love to share with them before we release them from the clubhouse?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad that you created this platform. That's what I'm going to call it. You know, we don't have enough things that speak to the youth. They have movies like The Butler and things of that nature, but those movies don't always speak to the youth. We need movies like Journey Home, movies like Fruitvale, things that actually speak to the youth so that they can understand a little bit better. And I'm very glad. I know that this movie will do well. And I can't wait for it to come to Michigan because I'm going to be the first one to get my ticket to come see it. I'm coming.
Yes, that's awesome. And we thank you so much. If you have any links or anything, please always feel free to send them. We're going to continue to talk about this show as we proceed with other shows. We're going to bring it up. If you have any links, we're going to post them. And if you're coming to any cities up north, please, please let us know because we would love to come out and support and as well as bring others to do the same.
Sure. We're definitely working on some shows up there. I think we have one coming actually in May. The first week in May will be up in New Jersey.
In New Jersey?
Yeah, with the Sigmas up there. So.
Okay.
I'll let you know the details as it gets closer.
Yes, I'm a Jersey girl. You got to let us know. I will be there in full force with my little crew of individuals. We will be there. You have our word on that one. We will be there. Just make sure we know. We're going to bring out our young black men so that they can see it, and that's going to be awesome. I can't wait. Yes, and thank you for coming out, spending the time. Thank you, Xavier. I can't wait to see how you bring this character to life. I'm already excited from the clip that I saw. And, again, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And we look forward to seeing you soon.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Yeah. That was powerful.
Mm-hmm. I literally have 2 minutes.
Like, I had a total, total emotional roller coaster with that subject. Like, I could go on for days about the, you know, the situation that our youth are in, the situation that young black men are facing every day, and even black women, you know, because, again, you also see the missing posters and stuff for, you know, the black women who are constantly snatched up or, you know, abducted and raped and killed as if they're nothing. And then something does have to change. What is going to change, the future will only know, because it seems like we come a long way, but we're right back where we started from. Aaron?
It's a great show. I'm very proud. I'm glad everybody had a good time. And, you know, join us again. Saturday we got LaTanya West.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a show tomorrow night, Author Spotlight. That'll be Authoress Red and Marcus Lewis will be joining us in the clubhouse.
Yes.
So it's gonna we got a hot
tomorrow.
Week coming.
And Sunday night
tomorrow, same time.
Of Author Wives. That'll be the second show of season one, and they're gonna be talking about some book groupies. So
we might reveal wife number two this week. We're still in discussion. We had some contract. We had to go back into negotiations with the contract. They started asking for more money.
Yeah, we have to speak to them. But we thank everybody for coming out. Thank you to all our callers. Thank you to the chat room. We appreciate it. Educate yourself. Educate your children. You know, stay as wise as you can about what's going on. And Aaron, drop that beat.
Yeah.
Whatever changes you have to make, then you just do it. You got to think about your life. Being a black man in America isn't easy. The hunt is on. And you're the prey. All I'm saying is, survive. All right?